Violence will not bring change. It'll only bring destruction.
The battle for the U.S. presidency focuses on racial tension and associated violence. This is Wednesday, September 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, Japan is trying to identify who the country's next leader should be. Hong Kong is battling a resurgence of COVID-19 with free testing for everyone, but it's controversial. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Racial tensions in America have taken center stage in the U.S. presidential campaign following deadly confrontations between Black Lives Matter protesters and white supporters of President Donald Trump. VOA's Brian Patton reports how the president over the weekend responded to the protest with a strong law and order message, while his Democratic rival Joe Biden Monday criticized Trump for recklessly encouraging violence.
Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden on Monday blamed President Trump for deadly violence over the weekend after Trump supporters in Portland, Oregon clashed with racial equality advocates.
He may believe, mouthing the words, law and order makes him strong. But his failure to call on his own supporters to stop acting as an armed militia in this country shows how weak he is.
On Saturday in Portland, one person was shot and killed following confrontations between a caravan of Trump supporters, some of them armed, and Black Lives Matter demonstrators who have held nightly protests for the last 3 months. The shooting victim in Portland was affiliated with a conservative activist group called Patriot Prayer. President Trump called the counter-protesters in Portland who support him great patriots on Twitter Sunday. Last week in Kenosha, Wisconsin, a Trump supporter shot three people, two fatally, during protests that erupted there after a black man was shot in the back 7 times during a confrontation with police. At the Republican National Convention, President Trump denounced racial equality demonstrators as anarchists and criticized Democrats for condoning violence committed by these groups to maintain support from African American voters.
If the Democrat Party wants to stand with anarchists, agitators, rioters, looters, and flag burners, that is up to them. But I, as your president, will not be a part of it.
Biden on Monday strongly denounced any violence committed by supporters or opponents.
It's lawlessness, plain and simple. And those who do it should be prosecuted. Violence will not bring change. It'll only bring destruction.
President Trump is planning to visit Kenosha this week, even though Wisconsin's Democratic Governor Tony Evers urged him not to come, saying in a letter, "Your presence will only delay our work to overcome division." Portland's Democratic Mayor Ted Wheeler also criticized Trump for allegedly fomenting hate and division in the country. Trump called Wheeler a fool on Twitter for not calling in the National Guard to restore order. Biden has tried to make Trump's inability to contain the coronavirus pandemic the primary campaign issue. It is unclear whether Trump's law and order focus will change the dynamics of the race, but polls now show Biden's lead over Trump shrinking in key swing states like Michigan and Pennsylvania. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. As Afghan violence continues, the U.S. calls for peace talks without delay. India accuses China of fresh provocative actions at its mountain border. Thailand's new finance minister resigns amid economic crisis. Myanmar blocks an activist website saying it spreads fake news. And the Philippines says it will not stop projects with China firms blacklisted by the United States. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. We continue on VOA Asia. Japan's top government spokesman, Yoshihide Suga, has won the backing of the ruling party's largest faction to become the country's next leader. Reuters' Gloria Tso reports.
Japan's top government spokesman Yoshihide Suga is now a strong frontrunner to become the country's next leader after Prime Minister Shinzo Abe announced last Friday that he would resign due to health issues. It was first reported on Tuesday that Suga has now won the backing of the ruling party's largest faction. Suga is Japan's chief cabinet secretary and Abe's longtime lieutenant, and he is widely expected to continue the policy course set out by Abe, including the Abenomics strategy aimed at reviving the economy and keeping it afloat during the global health crisis. Suga has not yet publicly announced his candidacy for leader of the Liberal Democratic Party, but a source tells Reuters he has indicated privately that he intends to run, and media reports said he would formally announce his intention to run on Wednesday. Party Secretary General Toshihiro Nakai said LDP executives agreed to a simplified vote by party MPs from both chambers of parliament and heads of local chapters. That's despite younger LDP legislators presenting a demand for a wider full-scale vote on Monday. The party is expected to hold its leadership vote on September 14th. The party's leader will almost certainly become prime minister because of its majority in the lower house of parliament.
Reuters' Gloria Tso. We continue on BOA Asia. Hong Kong began free coronavirus testing for all residents in the Asian financial hub Tuesday as the mainland Chinese-led initiative faced skepticism from the city's medical community and public, with some activists urging a boycott. Reporter Rhea Mogul in Hong Kong spoke with VOA Steve Miller about the program.
Hong Kong has been going through its third wave of COVID infections. We've done actually, you know, pretty well in keeping the number of infections at bay, you know, considering that we are about 1,000 kilometers from Wuhan, which was the sort of epicenter of the outbreak and where everything happened. But in over the past maybe 2-3 months, we've experienced a pretty, you know, horrific third wave for Hong Kong standards, where we saw, you know, triple digit infections per day. So for those reasons, the government have decided to implement this voluntary mass testing scheme. So the goal is to ultimately test, I guess, all 7.5 million Hong Kong residents. And, you know, we've seen similar schemes implemented in other countries, South Korea, for example.
Speaking of South Korea, one of the most iconic pictures during their mass testing was, of course, the drive-through process, which they pioneered. That's not something that exactly can happen in Hong Kong. So what's the plan to get these tests conducted?
Right. So there are, it's not a drive-through test like South Korea, but there are several centers dispersed across the city, and people have to sign up online. I imagine based on their district. So they'll go to the one closest to them and just show up and get tested. And today was the first day that it's happened. And from all the news reports and from all the firsthand accounts that I've seen so far, it's pretty smooth sailing for everyone that has voluntarily signed up to go get tested. You have to queue in line, you know, be socially distant. And most people have been out of testing centers in minutes. But a reason for this, I guess, is because not many people have signed up. Since registrations began, only a fraction of Hong Kong people, about 7%, have signed up to get tested voluntarily.
I understand that registration is still open, so the government is hoping that more people will take advantage of this testing. But I also understand there's a lot of concern about how the personal data will be used.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the Hong Kong government have involved and asked for help from a number of mainland Chinese firms and doctors to help with this mass testing. And this has led to a lot of fears of harvesting of data and DNA of Hong Kong people, you know, as Beijing continues to crack down on calls for democracy reform in Hong Kong. In fact, an alliance of healthcare workers, district councillors, pro-democracy activists, including Joshua Wong, they've all urged Hong Kong citizens to boycott the testing completely. You know, LegCo elections were also supposed to be held just in 5 days on September 6th. And that's been postponed for at least a year. And people are very angry that, well, you've got these mass testing sites and people are going to gather in the thousands, but you've canceled elections whereby people could have gone to cast their vote.
Reporter Rhea Mogul speaking with VOA Steve Miller. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. A park in Tokyo, Japan, has added two new public restrooms that feature transparent walls. The restrooms remain see-through until people enter. Then the walls turn opaque once the doors are closed. Award-winning Japanese architect Shigeru Ban is the designer of the unique toilets. The goal of the project was to make them accessible to anyone regardless of age, gender, or disability. The outer walls of the toilets have a layer of glass that remain clear when hooked up to an electric current. But when the door is locked, the current is cut, and a special film makes the glass opaque to conceal the user. Cecilia Lopez, a travel blogger from Argentina, was very interested in the design.
Maybe I feel a little anxious the first time, like, will this work? Is somebody, like, in the glass trying to look inside or something? But, yeah, I think it's more for the fun of it, like, to really feel comfortable inside.
Kanasaji, a member of the social innovation team of the Nippon Foundation, explained the reasoning for the design.
When designing this, there are two concerns when using Tokyo toilets. First is whether it's clean inside, and second, if there is anyone hiding inside. So if you can confirm both of those, it will be safe.
Amid the pandemic, 50-year-old Hong Kong costume designer and actor Edmund Cook has not slowed down his creative process with the designs of his custom masks. The mask started gaining attention on his social media platforms, with each piece displaying dramatic and playful faces on face masks. The masks are made to represent current issues occurring in the world, not for daily use. A mask using a takeout container represents the harm to the environment the pandemic is causing.
I think every piece of art is originated from our daily lives. A lot of things in my life have inspired me to make these face masks. Take the coronavirus as an example. I've seen a lot of pictures of this virus, and it has a lot of spikes. It happened that I had some materials from my cuttings which looked similar, and so I created this face mask.
Most of the masks were made without the use of special materials. Cook only used ordinary household objects and leftover costume designs.
I really
want to document different things that happen in our lives. I think this project is not only about the face masks that I've made, they're Hong Kong people's face masks, which record what happened to us.
Cook hopes that one day the mask will provide a reminder of what Hong Kong has been through amid the pandemic. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman. You're listening to VOA Asia. For the residents along Indonesia's Sisidane River, the coronavirus has brought not just deadly disease, but also a deluge of medical waste, a constant stream of syringes, face masks, and hazmat suits floating by. Libby Hogan reports.
Dirty syringes, used masks, and gloves are among the waste streaming into the Sisidane River in Indonesia's city of Tangerang. Medical waste has been piling high since the first cases of coronavirus in the country. Then, in May, the walls of a landfill beside the river collapsed, sending tons of garbage cascading into the river, doubling the threat for those downstream, families who bathe and wash their clothes in the river. It's triggering fears that the coronavirus could spread as the country still struggles to contain it. 39-year-old Ashri Dewayani is trying to keep her children away from the water.
I worry about the kids getting infected with COVID-19 when they swim here. I'm anxious. That's why I always forbid my children from swimming in the river.
Indonesia has the highest COVID-19 death toll in Southeast Asia. And like many countries, it's also got a huge increase in medical waste. The Ministry of Health has admitted the country lacked treatment facilities and said it was trying to find a solution. Aid Yunus, founder of Sisidane River Rubbish Bank, is working with volunteers to organize a cleanup.
We are concerned about the sustainability of this river. We don't want it polluted with any waste, including industrial waste, which is dangerous, especially during this pandemic.
The health ministry said that up to 1,500 tons of COVID-19 medical waste was produced across the country each day from March until June.
That was Reuters' Libby Hogan reporting. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, which includes Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay healthy and enjoy the day ahead.